Spring planting is a crucial period for Alaskan barley farmers, given the short time during which the seed must be planted in order to reach maturity and the unpredictable weather. Farmers in Alaska have anywhere from 10 to 14 days to plant thousands of acres of barley. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. The short period in which to plant barley frequently sacrifices precision planting, and planting good seed correctly can minimize the danger of crop damage from early frost. The Agricultural Experiment Station of the University of Alaska Fairbanks has been researching what varieties grow best, what planting methods are most effective, and what fertilizer should be used. For example, research has found that it is important to have the fertilizer mixed down into the root zone, not left on the soil surface where it is unavailable for plant use. It is also important for the seeds to be planted as soon as possible after tillage operations, before too much water has evaporated. Water is lost by evaporation each time the soil is disturbed, so it is a real problem getting fertilizer properly mixed into the soil and barley seeded with a minimum loss of moisture. One possible solution that the experiment station has researched in the Delta Clearwater area is the no-till method of planting that eliminates pre-plant fertilization and tillage operations. Studies have found that there is little spring temperature difference in tilled and untilled soils, and, significantly, no apparent effect on barley germination. Perennial weeds are found in patches and can be effectively controlled with spot herbicide applications. Farm equipment manufacturers have recently been designing minimum till and no-till drills that can plant both seed and fertilizer. Although some problems have been pinpointed, research has found that the no-till method can reduce time and expense. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Two might be continents apart, but Alaska and Australia do have common interests. Both have a relatively small population for the landmass occupied, both have large rural areas, and both have undertaken agricultural projects where farming has not been the predominant activity. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Alaska has begun grain production projects in Delta, Point Mackenzie, and is planning one at Nenana. In the Northern Territory of Australia, projects are underway and being planned for Douglas Daly and the Adelaide River. The approach in Alaska has been to sell large tracts of land initially in farms of varying sizes. Much of the responsibility for success or failure is transferred to the private farmer who buys the land from the government. In the Northern Territory, the first phase has been to establish model farms in the two areas in order to obtain information on a smaller scale that can be applied to the larger land areas. The second phase will include selling large tracts of land in farm sizes similar to project farms in Alaska. The two approaches are expected to provide over 400,000 acres of new land in production both in Alaska and Australia during a 10-year period through 1990. Both Alaska and the Northern Territory created agencies to administer agricultural development. The state of Alaska created a 5-person Alaska Agricultural Action Council, and the Northern Territory established the Agricultural Development and Marketing Authority under a single head. A major responsibility of both agencies is to develop the marketing system. This includes coordinating construction and operation of interior and export grain elevators. The only way to be cost-effective in grain agriculture is to sell large volumes. Because the population of each region compared is small, the export market is important. Both Alaska and Australia are working to get the external market established. The Agricultural Experiment Station of the University of Alaska Fairbanks has developed regular exchanges of information with Australia as part of a comparative study of the two agricultural development efforts. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. The number of deaths by fire is astronomical in Alaska compared with the rate across the nation. The problem in rural Alaska is 5 times that of the city. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Several University of Alaska Fairbanks employees recently served on a special fire safety task force to study the use of smoke detectors in rural Alaska. Funded by the Department of Public Safety and the Alaska Council on Science and Technology, the study tested 6 brands of smoke detectors over an 8-month period. Results of the study indicated a number of things. First, there is no single best smoke detector for the bush. Second, the attitude of the householder is important in determining the acceptance and effectiveness of the smoke detectors in village homes. Third, the biggest problem centered on the number of false alarms, apparently caused by cooking. Fourth, the test revealed that the batteries must be changed much more frequently than the once a year recommended by Underwriters Laboratory. Cold temperatures and false alarms contributed to earlier battery drain. The task force concluded that before any widespread installation of smoke detectors could happen in rural Alaska, an extensive education program would need to be implemented. I'm Karen Sedzill, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Increased demand for wood for fuel has resulted in intensified research on forest productivity. The reduction in the density of the forest and the addition of chemical elements can markedly increase tree growth rates. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Growth of plants depends upon adequate supplies of moisture, light, and chemical elements. Drastic seasonal fluctuations in day length and temperature, short growing seasons, low soil temperatures, and the occurrence of permafrost are leading factors that can diminish light, moisture, and nutrients that in turn reduce forest productivity. For the past 12 years, the Forest Soils Laboratory of the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the Institute of Northern Forestry of the U.S. Department of Agriculture have jointly explored modifications that could be introduced to increase tree growth rates in the interior. The key modifications are thinning and fertilization. A reduction in forest density by thinning increases the amount of solar radiation reaching the forest floor that tends to produce warmer rooting zone temperatures. Reduced forest density also conserves soil water and nutrient supplies for use by the remaining favored trees. Research has found, for example, that in thinning white spruce from 7,000 to 600 stems per acre, the average yearly tree growth doubled. Significantly, fertilization alone had little effect over the 12-year period. Thinning combined with fertilization nearly tripled tree growth. Decreasing stand density to 300 stems per acre produced a 4-fold response in tree growth and a 6-fold increase when combined with fertilization. Still to be answered through continued research are the questions regarding long-term effects of thinning and fertilization, frequency and amount of fertilizer applications, and the costs and benefits of the modifications. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Permafrost is soil or rock that exists at below freezing temperatures for a period of 2 or more years. Permafrost underlies nearly a quarter of the Earth's land surface, and 3/4 of Alaska has permafrost. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Permafrost forms when areas with average air temperatures less than 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 Celsius cause the ground to freeze from the top downwards. The thickness of permafrost is determined by a number of factors, including air temperature and soil properties. For example, at Prudhoe Bay, where the average air temperature is 14 degrees Fahrenheit, permafrost can go to depths of 2,000 feet. In Fairbanks, where the average air temperature is warmer at 29 degrees Fahrenheit, permafrost will be non-existent on the warm southern slopes or go nearly 300 feet deep in the valleys. Because climate controls the presence of permafrost through the average air temperatures of an area, a warming of the climate will affect permafrost. Since the interior and southern Alaska have average temperatures so close to freezing, a slight warming will result in melting. And scientists are predicting that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is producing a warming of the Earth. If this warming occurs, the permafrost in the interior and southern Alaska would disappear over a period of centuries. But melting problems would start immediately because the permafrost would melt from the top down. When permafrost contains excess ice, the thawing of it produces settling of the ground surface. Almost any human activity, such as clearing fields, digging wells, and building homes, roads, and runways, will almost always produce settling. Research by the Geophysical Institute and the School of Engineering at the University of Alaska Fairbanks continues to develop a basic understanding of permafrost and how to deal with it. Since most of the permafrost problems are associated with excess ice and thawing, much of the research is aimed at detecting ice in the soil so it can be avoided or worked using specialized construction techniques. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Wrangell Mountain is the northernmost active volcano in the Pacific Rim, and it is 8 times the size of Mount Rainier. It has also demonstrated increased and variable activity, suggesting a possible eruption. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. The Wrangell Mountains cover an area of continuous snow and ice cover that exceeds 5,000 square kilometers. That's about the size of the state of Delaware. In 1953, Mount Wrangell was selected as the most feasible location for establishing a high-latitude, high-altitude cosmic ray observatory in Alaska because of the broad, flat areas at the summit that permitted construction of a laboratory building. Today, this same area is not safe because of the volcanic activity. Until 1965, the glacier ice was in equilibrium with the snow surface constant in altitude. Research by the Geophysical Institute of the University of Alaska Fairbanks has focused on the north crater of the volcano, where the melting has been most pronounced over the years. There, diminishing ice volume, rising temperatures of underlying rock, and accelerated glacial movement all point to increasing volcanic activity. Significantly, the north crater was full of ice before 1965 to depths nearly 200 meters, or approximately 600 feet. Since 1965, all but 20% of this ice has melted, and only a hole remains. The rate of melting can be used as a means of measuring heat flow in the volcano because the air temperature at the Wrangell summit is always below freezing. That means the sunshine or warm temperatures are not causing the melting. It's just the volcanic heat coming from inside the mountain. Although Wrangell is not believed to be an immediate threat, an eruption would cause glaciers to melt, producing mudslides that could reach all the way to the Copper River. Research continues to observe the active changes occurring at the summit and to understand the structure and plumbing of the volcanic Mount Wrangell. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM.